All right, good afternoon, everybody. Today is Wednesday, June 4th, 2025, and this is a collective bargaining session between the UFF team at UCF and the team representing the UCF Board of Trustees. As is our typical first action, I think we have some minutes to review from our meeting last month on May 14th.
All right, looks good to me.
Right, super. Anybody else have any concerns going once,
Looks fine.
going twice? I think we have minutes. Thank you all very, very much. And Robert, as I mentioned to you in an email the other day, we're planning on sharing three proposals, three articles that we're proposing today. You weren't sure at that time whether you were going to have something.
We don't have anything.
Okay. Perfect. We'll just go with the three things that we've got. And what I intend to do this afternoon is talk about Articles 8, 20, and 19. So, Charlie, can we take a
Sure.
look at Article 8, first of all? We've been talking about sharing an Article 8 with you for some time, and I'm glad that we can finally do that this afternoon. We've made a number of changes to this article, most of which we don't think are terribly substantive, but we wanted to go over the changes that we're proposing to make. In lines 5 and 6, we're adding a statement to indicate that the university will ensure that searches are compliant with appropriate laws and university policies and regulations. So that wasn't there before, but we wanted to get that in there. And then there's some language that has been there for some time in lines 8 through 21 that we would like to strike because these particular lines really don't refer to bargaining unit members. And we want to the best that we can, we'd like to keep the collective bargaining agreement applicable to the members of the bargaining unit, the employees. So we're proposing to strike lines 8 through 21. And then the next thing that we want to show you is in lines
All right, can
20.
we? I'm
Go
still
ahead.
reading. I'm still reading what's crossed out. Sorry, Chuck. Just give me another couple of seconds.
Certainly.
Can I ask a question now, or do you want to wait till the end?
Go ahead. Go ahead. Sure.
I'm just curious if lines 15 through 21 are in UCF policy or regulation somewhere already.
Right now, they have been.
So this is just repeated in the CBA?
I don't want to say repeated, but these things have been covered in, I don't know whether it's been formal policies, formal regulations, but certainly practice that had been overseen by the Office of Institutional Equity, who is not now overseeing all the searches. But everything that we understand is everything's going to continue. The processes are going to continue in the same way, but because of some federal changes, OIE has been changed to ONAC, and they're not going to be overseeing the searches like they were. But we're saying it with the statement that we have in lines 5 and 6 that we are going to comply with all state and federal laws that are applicable to hiring. And also university policies and regulations. I don't have instant recall on all the policies and regulations, And there may be some of these things that are covered in those regulations.
So let's come back to it at the end, then. Let's go through the rest of it.
Okay.
And I may raise something from here at the end.
Okay. In lines 26 through 41, we are prepared to make some changes. Actually, these changes have been implemented on the employment agreements so that all the required elements that have been listed in the CBA are still going to be required elements on the employment agreements that in-unit employees will receive. The terms, the names of those required items that are shown here conform to the terms in Workday. So if somebody's trying to compare something on an agreement to what they may find in Workday, there's going to be now, you know, much better one-to-one correspondence between the terms, the items that are on the employment agreement and the items that are found in Workday. A change that, so, you know, everything there, instead of just saying date, it's the effective date. That's what it says on the agreement. We're still going to have the title and rank. There's still a legacy job code that's there. There's still an employee class. Rather than principal place of employment, we now say primary work location, because that's what it says in Workday. We want to make it clear in item E, you know, whether somebody's 9 month or 12 month. We're more explicit about the tenure status. Got the authorized FTE and, you know, the total annualized salary. Now, what it says in lines 26 and 27 is, even though for some time employment agreements have been updated annually, we want to move to a point where we're only providing documents to be signed. We're only going to issue new agreements when there are changes in item B. So somebody's title changes, their rank changes because they got promoted. There would be a new agreement for that. Item C as well. If somebody's primary work location changes from the Rosen campus to the downtown campus, we would want to recognize that with a new agreement. If a department changes, occasionally there are employees that move from one department to another, there would be a new agreement there. If somebody changed from a 9 month agreement to a 12 month, they would get a new agreement as well. And Charlie, now I can't see all the rest
of
those
letters. I'm sorry. Yeah, tenure status.
Tenure status, that will be clear. The authorized FTE, if that changes. But if the salary changes, and salaries change for a lot of different reasons at a lot of different times throughout the year, we enjoy the times when we get increases for everybody. Hopefully that will happen each and every year. But there are other times when salaries change, and what we're suggesting here is we wouldn't be issuing new agreements every time unless one of these other things changed at the same time, because up-to-date salary information is readily available to all employees through Workday. If somebody wants to know what's my salary right now, it's very easy to find that in Workday. Budget entity is another one that if there was a change, if somebody went from being a CNG employee to an ENG employee, there would be a new agreement issued. If any special conditions were to change, for example, there's a temporary stipend that's implemented, there would be a new agreement, both when that stipend is implemented and when it, if it were to go away at some point, there'd be another agreement that would be issued.
So Chuck, just so I make understand what you're pitching here, is you're saying that this language would let you be responsive at the point of the change as opposed to changing in between academic years?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But somebody who remains in rank. Say there's an associate professor who remains in rank and gets the increases that everybody else gets. Maybe there's a tip or something like that as well. The salary information would be updated in Workday. They wouldn't get a new agreement on that. But if somebody
we're not obligated to provide an agreement.
We thank could, you, not I suppose, obligated.
But we're not obligated to.
But somebody who is promoted, somebody who is given a stipend, somebody who's changing from 12 months to 9 months, there's going to be agreements. We would be obligated to provide a new agreement for those cases. But the things that happen frequently, sometimes to the employees collectively, but many times there are other times when salaries change. It's a tremendous burden to have to update all these agreements when the information's already readily available to the employees in Workday. So we're just proposing that there would be a necessity to process fewer of these employment agreements. So that's 26 through 41. Charlie, can you go to one?
Just one more thing. I just, by and large, everything's the same. It just, we clarified what the words were. So date by itself didn't really mean very much, but effective date really does. So we really tried to make the employment agreement match this language so that it's a lot more clearer what we are providing.
I think your intent here is pretty clear.
Good. Great. Okay. All right. Now, Chuck, you wanted to go to
114 and 115.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a sentence that is redundant. We talk about what the criteria are for summer appointments. We think this sentence is unnecessary. The criteria are already specified above in this section. Charlie, 140 through 145. We wanted to update this paragraph as well. There was a change that we put in Article 19 when we did the current full book, and we wanted to make sure that we did something here as well. And the change that we made in Article 19 was recognizing that sometimes there are employees who may not be under contract with the university that have some outside activity that may represent a conflict of interest, and there still should be a disclosure of that activity so that the university is aware of it. And we just wanted to put this in this article as well, just to remind people. And the idea is we want to make sure that if there's something that employees disclose, that they're aware of it. And I think the more opportunities that we remind them of that, I think it's less likely that something will slip through the cracks.
You're saying it's a short work break that they'd still be obligated, right?
Correct. And then the last thing is lines 232 to 243. Here we're proposing a change that would actually catch the CBA up with our current practice, and a practice that has been in place since early 2023. We had had an offline meeting, not a bargaining session, but an offline meeting with the leadership of the union, and talked about how we notify the union when an employee is removed from in-unit to out-of-unit. And it used to be that there was, you know, a memo that had to be generated, send an email, a lot of paperwork that had to happen. And what we're doing now, we had agreed at that time that we would, within 45 days of somebody moving from in-unit to non-unit, we would notify the union and give the union access to a shared spreadsheet. And we've been doing that. And I don't think we've come anywhere close to 45 days. It's typically as soon as we know that somebody's moving, and we're doing the same kind of thing with stipends as well. As soon as we know about it.
Well, I don't I mean, unless I don't know something, I don't think we've been doing it with out of unit. We've been doing it with stipends and ADIs. Charlie, have you been doing the spreadsheet with out of unit people too?
I have, and it's just, let me show you the.
I mean, I'm out of the loop because I don't get those emails anymore.
Right, but we have the spreadsheet, the into non-unit
I
changes
see.
and promotion guidelines. So all these things have been available since 2023, early 2023, which I thought was a great suggestion that you made, so that we can, you can download a spreadsheet very easily. Anything else there, Chuck, that you do you have any
Well,
questions about that, Robert?
I wanted to point out that I think this has worked very well from our perspective, and it's allowed us to provide this information in a timely way. And we can do it if there are multiple changes happening at one time. For example, if number of people in a department are getting an ADI at the same time, which I know this right now, this is not about ADIs, but with one notification, we can inform the UFF of those ADIs without having to do separate memos for each and every person. So from our perspective, this looks great. And I wanted to highlight this in particular because I want to bring this up again later on. I think this is an example of something where we've been able to work with the leadership of the union to provide a solution to a problem that was at least burdensome for us, that seems to be working out well. And now that it's been proven in concept, we're coming here and saying, let's codify this in the CBA. We're saying this is what our practice is, let's update this. And it's something that certainly from our perspective is working very, very well. And we're excited about it. And we think this was a good approach to sort of give this shared spreadsheet a test drive to see how it's going to work. And we think it's working well.
So I have a bureaucratic processes question. Typically, the out-of-unit notifications are people who go into administration, but do we also get notifications if someone's moving from in-unit to, say, a staff position somewhere in the
If they
university?
are part of a re if they are applying for a staff position, then no, because they're not reclassifying.
Because that's a end of one job and beginning of a new job?
Correct.
I
Whenever
see.
you end a job, resign, and then apply for and receive that other job, so you transition even without a break in service, it's not reported that way.
Okay. All right.
All right, Chuck,
That's
what would you
what we wanted to propose for Article 8.
All right. So I only have one thing, Chuck, for you. And I think this is mostly in those early lines, like what is it, 6 through 12 or whatever it was that we were talking about earlier,
Probably 8
beginning,
through 21.
8 through 21. There you go. I'm sure the rest doesn't matter, but the changes in that first part, if I would like to know what is being removed is currently part of UCF policy regulation. So if you can get back to me on that, I mean, it doesn't have to be at the next session if you just want to send me the policy and regulations that cover what's being stripped here, if it is in policy and regulations somewhere else, so we can see it. If not, just let me know it's not, and we can go from there when we meet and discuss this
Okay,
article.
I will look into that. I think one thing that may be different, that there may be policies and regulations that cover these for employees, but one of the reasons that we're looking at striking some of that language is here it applies to non-employees who are not members of the bargaining unit.
Well, aren't members of the bargaining unit still subject to policy and regulations of
Well,
employees,
yeah,
or?
yes, but
as long as there's not a conflict.
What I'm saying is, though, we're proposing striking this because from the CBA, because at that particular point, it's not referring to members of the bargaining unit.
Okay. So but if you want to make a note when you give me that information, that might be helpful.
We'll look at that. That's just
all right.
A point of clarification. So yeah, we will look into that and get back to you. And we'll also be sending you Article 8.
Okay.
Anything else on Article 8, Robert?
That's my only question. I'm sure the next time we meet, I'll have some further questions when the team gets together and pours over Article 8. So we may, when we return to the next bargaining session, have some further questions about Article 8.
Okay. I think Talat had her hand raised a moment ago.
Yeah, I'll wait till, because I have a few questions, but we can discuss internally and then get back to you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Super. Thank you, Talat. Okay, the next thing that that I would like to talk about is Article 20.
Oh, okay.
And Article 20 is one that we spent a lot of time on when we were looking at our full book negotiations. And we came to agreement last fall and on this Article 20. We've got this footnote in Article 20 and also Article 19 that I think is certainly in force right now. We haven't had a lot of experience with this to know how Article 20 and Article 19 are going to function under the current new conditions that we have. As we looked very carefully at the proposal that you shared with us on Article 20, when I was opening up Article 20, I kept coming to this phrase in line 10 that says we want to have a prompt and efficient procedure. And I think that's very important. We want to get grievances resolved as quickly as we can and as fairly as we can. We want to do a good job with these things. We want to make sure that the appropriate decision is reached. We looked very carefully at the feedback panel that had been proposed, and it was really kind of an optional step. If I were to summarize it, it looked like an optional step between what is now step one and step two. So perhaps there's a grievant isn't satisfied with a step one decision and invokes this feedback panel. We looked at that, and there's some things that gave us pause about it, and in particular gave me pause when we think about trying to get a prompt and efficient procedure. The feedback panel would essentially add a step to the process when the feedback panel was invoked. There's now some more time that needs to be spent giving the feedback panel an opportunity to review what's been done. At the time Article 20 was shared with us, your proposal for Article 20 was shared with us, it wasn't clear at that time, and you even suggested we ought to think about it, which we did. It's, what do we do at step two? If this is an additional step that goes in between steps one and two, what happens with the grievance that's filed at step two? Another thing that gave us pause is it's not clear what would happen if a grievant is not represented by the United Faculty of Florida. If a grievant is representing themselves, as it happens from time to time, sometimes grievants are represented by outside counsel. It wasn't clear how this would work. An additional point of pause was that the observation made by a feedback panel goes to the grievance representative, and it's up to the grievance representative to determine whether that information is shared with the university. And, you know, again, worrying about a prompt and efficient procedure, we have this extra step that's is taking some time. And depending upon the opinion of the grievance representative, it may just be the university has to sit and wait, and we don't get any additional information. It's not not completely shared. So those are some of the things that gave us pause. We also looked at, in particular, what Florida Gulf Coast University does with their grievances. And I'm not prepared to mimic this at this point, but it's interesting to know that they take advantage of an informal resolution step, that before a grievance can be filed, they have to go through an informal resolution process. So that was a little bit different, and we certainly looked at that very, very carefully as well. We also noticed that there were a number of places in Article 20 where your team had proposed extending the filing and postponement deadlines. And again, as we think about prompt and efficient procedure, when we start extending all those deadlines, it could really delay the resolution of the grievance for the benefit of the grievant. So Article 20, as it exists right now, has a postponement period to seek informal resolution. And sometimes grievants take advantage of that. And the way the article is written, a postponement could take place either at step one or step two, depending upon where the grievance starts. Sometimes grievances are filed at step one, sometimes they're filed at step two. In those cases, the postponement could be either at the first step for a step one grievance or a second step for a step two. Sometimes there are grievances that are filed at step one, and for whatever reason, they are escalated to a step two. In that case, the postponement step could take place at step two. So wherever the grievance really starts being processed, there's an opportunity for an informal resolution during a postponement period. And the CBA also allows for extensions that are requested during a postponement period that they will normally be granted, unless granting them means that we would be unable to resolve the grievance. So we think there may be some things that we're already doing that are already in the language, and maybe we're not using them to the fullest extent possible. So Charlie, could you go to lines 182 and 195? What we had done here is taken languages that appeared in the section on step one and almost completely just duplicated. Where it says step one, we changed it to step two. Otherwise, I think it's exactly the same language. To just try to emphasize that there may be times when there's a step two grievance and maybe it hasn't been clear that there can't be this informal step to try to get this grievance resolved. We wanted to make it clear that that's the case. And, you know, we would hope that grievance and the grievance representatives would take advantage of this opportunity to continue to seek a prompt and efficient resolution using the things that we already have now. So that's basically what we have in Article 20. But I wanted to remind you, as we look at what we're suggesting here for Article 20, which is a much less extensive change than had been proposed by the UFF. I want to remind you what we just talked about at the end of Article 8. And what I'm wondering is, if it's possible to kind of meet offline, not in a bargaining meeting, not to do bargaining, but to kind of talk to each other, talk with each other about what we might do to make sure that we have a prompt and efficient process and that we perhaps make the grievance more comfortable with this process. So what I had suggested a while ago is with Article 8, there has been something that we have been test driving for a while. And what I'm wondering about is, can we get together and talk about what we might do to test drive something that could later on be a change in Article 20? I think what we did in Article 8 with the shared spreadsheet has worked out well. I hope we'll agree on that. There may be some other things we'll talk about in Article 8, but I hope we can agree that that spreadsheet has been good. And I just can't help but think that there may be something that we're not able to suggest when we're throwing proposals for Article 20 back and forth, that maybe we'd be better off sitting down with a pot of coffee and just talking about, what might work. There may be some ideas that that you have that haven't occurred to us. There may be some things we've thought of, and somehow we can put these things together. And I'm just suggesting that maybe something a little bit informal to try to see, is there something we want to test drive before we codified it? Anything that we put into the CBA is basically permanent, and it's something here that we just haven't tried. We don't know if it's going to work. We don't know if it's going to work as well as you had hoped with the changes that you'd suggested for Article 20. So, this is what we would like to offer to you as Article 20, with this invitation as well to say, can we get together informally and talk, not bargain, talk, and figure out, is there something that might be worth giving a test drive? So that's Article 20.
Is it my time to respond?
Please.
Okay. I'm sorry, Chuck. I don't think coffee and an informal conversation is going to paper over any differences, because I think fundamentally, Chuck, if I'm taking you as being genuine in your perspective on this, we are way far apart about what our issues are concerning Article 20. And I think until we can get on the same page as that, I don't see a productive conversation happen. Our issue with Article 20, which came out during full book, and we had these discussions, and I know you appealed to us to pass an Article 20 that was closely aligned to the legislation that was passed, and that we could reopen it here to get at the issues that were concerning to us, brought us to this point. And so, what I'm appealing to you, Chuck, and the rest of your team, is that we are here so you can address our concerns. And our concerns were not prompt and efficient. Those were not our concerns. So appealing to us for a prompt and efficient process, it's not going to go anywhere. What's going to go somewhere is an independent voice. That's what was stripped from us in the legislation. And that is the bedrock. That is the foundation of grievances. That's the foundation of labor unions and labor disputes and disciplines. Was this at some point in time an independent voice can come in between two disputing parties and offer a, however you want to call it, a solution or whatever. And I know there are some points in some places we still have that, but we don't have it here because of the legislation, and we recognize that. So we made it clear back during full book that we wanted that independent voice because, by nature, Chuck, You trust the administration. We don't trust the administration. So prompt and efficient does not provide trust for us with the administration in disciplinary disputes. What does provide trust is an independent voice that we would like inserted into the Article 20 process. Now, I heard you back when we were in full book, and you said, well, we can't be over bureaucratic. We can't have a system that's going to lengthen this process and make it more work for the bureaucracy at UCF. And we understood that, which is why, the bargaining team created this very stripped down process that I actually think doesn't take a whole lot of time, and it allows for an independent voice to be inserted in the process. So when it gets to the final stage of of a decision that, again, because of the legislation, it's all within your control, and I understand legally that is your right. And what we are saying is we want some independent voice inserted in this process some way. So, there's no conversation we need to have about prompt and efficient. It's unnecessary, coffee or otherwise. What we need to have is a conversation about how an independent voice can be inserted in this process. That's the conversation we need to have.
Well, thank you for your comments. I'm happy to have a cup of coffee and figure out together how we do this. I don't think we've hit a home run yet. And I don't know that just sending something back, this is how we do this, gets us anywhere. I think having a conversation about the things that are truly important from your perspective and from our perspective, that's how we ultimately could arrive at something. And that's what I'm
Right.
suggesting. I'm not suggesting that it has to be only a conversation about what we've proposed today. I'm saying, can we do something where we get together and talk? Not bargain, we're talking, we're throwing out ideas, thinking about what we might do. I offer them.
Chuck, would you
Okay, so
like to
just,
move
I mean,
on
one
then?
last thing, and we can move on if you want to move on. But the thing, and this was our understanding, was you all wanted to be in compliance with the law, right? And we
We
understand
will
that.
be in
Right. No,
compliance with the law.
I know. But I'm just saying, when we had the conversation with full book, I remember you came in and said, we want to be in compliance with the law. And we said, okay, we recognize that. We work with you on that. Now, I think there's a way for us to be in compliance with the law and have a process in this system that has the independent voice that we desire. And I think that, both of us should be in partnership to have an Article 20 that satisfies us and satisfies you. Just so you understand what we want and what our perspective is. It's not prompt and efficient. That's not going to move the needle on our end.
I hear you. I understand your position on this. I still think that there can be some less formal conversations that take place where things like an independent voice and the impact that that independent voice might have on our process, that all those things can be considered. That's what I'm suggesting to you.
Okay.
Chuck, do you want to move to 19?
Well, if
Yeah.
we finished on 20,
Yeah,
is
yeah.
there anything else on 20, Robert?
No, that's it. But
Okay.
19 is just referencing 20, right?
Well, we got a couple other things in 19
Oh, okay. All right.
that I want to share with you. In Article 19, there are going to be a couple of changes that we're going to propose. What I don't know how to do in Article 19, and this may be something else that we can try to brainstorm together. The grievance procedure in Article 19 is expedited. I mean, of necessity, because there are people who are proposing to do outside activities at a particular time, even though there's, there's an expedited process, but we can't extend that. So it fortunately, I don't think we've had but one grievance that related to Article 19, and we've been fortunate on that, because they really have to move. So I think if there were to be any added steps to this process in 19, that would complicate things for everybody, including the employee who's hoping to go and do some outside activity. So we're not proposing any changes to the grievance procedure in 19. There are two things that I wanted to point out. Charlie, in line 61, and this is related to something that we mentioned in
Nate.
Article 8 when we had theirs as well. We just want to make sure that the change that we put in 19.4D when we did full book is clarified here in 19.4C. And again, this is something that we want to make sure that employees know that summer outside activities should be disclosed. Chances are, since there's if they're not under contract, there's not going to be any conflict of commitment. As long as there's no conflict of interest, this thing will happen, but it's important that they are disclosed. And then I don't know whether Charlie may not even be able to show this, but on line 87, she took it out. Good for her. We did not have a line break after regulations in line 87.
So D and E were
So,
all D.
yeah, well, there was an E, but it was smushed together with what was in D. So that's the only thing that's changed. We put a line break in there. So those are the two things that we wanted to get before you
Well,
on
I correct
Article
formatting
19.
errors. That's fine. But yeah, there we are. This is the only real change or addition, I guess you could say, not change.
So that is Article 19.
That was the quickest article you've ever presented, Chuck. I feel I'm under pressure now to beat that record.
Well, it'd be nice if it got them
That
all done quickly and
was quicker than my, what was that article I presented that was quick? It was, oh, 32, right?
yeah, 32.
Yeah. I think that beat my 32.
I'm not sure that it beat your 32, Robert.
I don't
I'll
know. That was
call it a
quick.
draw.
We should get a timekeeper in here next time.
But anyhow,
All right.
that's what we have in mind for Article 19.
All right.
So that's what we've got for today. I think, covered everything that we intended. We are due to meet 2 weeks from today on the 18th of June.
All right.
You've
So
given
I
us
will
a
meet.
question that
Yeah.
we'll take a look at.
Right. So I'll meet with my team. I can't guarantee by the next session we'll have an article on any of this. We might have a response or some more questions, but that's going to be kind of the best case scenario for us for the next session.
Okay.
Since like 2 weeks,
Yeah,
right? The
2 weeks,
next session's 2 weeks.
they come up quickly when they're 2 weeks
Yeah, I don't
old.
know that. Yeah, I don't know that we can prepare something in 2 weeks
Okay.
based on what you've just given us.
Okay. All right, fair enough. All right, well, thank you very much for your attention. Thank you for your time this afternoon. We
All
will
right.
plan on getting together on the 18th, and we'll be in touch with you, Robert, as we're planning for that.
All right. So now we've seen it.